They say the best things in life are free. In Matthew's gospel, Jesus states, "Freely you've received, freely give." Everything we do here at Renewed Heart Ministries is for free. We are a not-for-profit adult religious re-education ministry, helping folks rediscover and understand the teachings of the Jesus of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. If you'd like to help us do what we do, I'll tell you how you can become a supporter of Renewed Heart Ministries after this. But for now, it's our hope that as you listen, your heart will be renewed and inspired to embody the beautiful values and teachings of the Jesus story, till the only world that remains is a world where love reigns. This is Herb Montgomery with Renewed Heart Ministries, and I want to welcome you to this week's weekly podcast. Our title this week is The Subversive Narratives of Advent, and this is going to be the first part of a three-part series. Our feature text is Luke 2, verse 10, where Luke says, "I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all people." Advent season has begun here in America, and over the next 2 weeks, I want to look at the birth narratives of Jesus from first century Christian, Jewish, and Roman perspectives, all three of them. And I believe that much has been lost, much has been co-opted and even eclipsed by imperial Christianity that began in the fourth century when Christianity became the official religion of the empire. So in the next two weekly podcasts after this one, we're going to be looking first at Matthew's birth narrative and then at Luke's. Now, both Matthew and Luke have story elements in common, but they also have elements that differ greatly, the other narrative details that sometimes even conflict. And we'll be reading each story in the context in which they were originally written, which they were created, and we'll see, I think in that original context, that these narratives are intensely subversive. They're subversive of the military, political, and economic, even theological ways of empire, especially the imperial theologies, not just in Rome, but across time, including even our own era. And I'll explain that as we go along. But a useful tool that I want to recommend this holiday season to is Marcus Borg and Dominic Crossan's timely volume, The First Christmas. If you've not read this book, you owe it to yourself to do so. They've done an invaluable work in compiling information about the historical, cultural setting in which these birth narratives were originally told, and the information that they've put together helps us discover, or rediscover rather, the story's meaning, not just simply to the first century followers of Jesus, but also how we can apply it today as well. And if I were teaching a class this holiday season on the Christmas narratives, I would, number one, make sure each one of the students had a copy of Matthew and Luke's narratives, but they'd also have this 244-page volume as an accompanying textbook. It is a fantastic overview. So let's first, let me give a few preliminary words about both narratives. Something that we need to note before we begin: these narratives are primarily concerned with this world, not with heaven. They're focused on this life. And too often, the birth narratives of Jesus are read through the lens of salvation defined as entrance into a post-mortem heaven. But that's not how the original Jewish Jesus community would have heard these stories. They were concerned with the whole life, not merely with an afterlife. And a spiritual or afterlife application of these narratives didn't become dominant. It didn't become the dominant interpretation throughout a culture until the expanding of the Roman Empire and Christianity's involvement in the Roman Empire and in European colonialism. And we've talked about the way that reading the gospel narratives with an otherworldly focus has had intensely destructive fruit. Before imperial Christianity, these narratives were understood to be about the transformation of this world. They were not solely theological, they were theological and political. And they announced the divine dream for this world and announced that that the fulfillment of that dream had begun in Jesus. And they were not about the destruction of this world, but about the restoration of it. So this restoration seen in the narratives as they were originally understood, and we'll see this, it was symbolized by visions of the end of war and the end of violence, the end of injustice, and the end of oppression. And let's talk too about the importance of context, a point that I have been harping on for months now, and I was really happy to see both Borg and Crossan address this, and that's the importance of acknowledging the historical context in which the Jesus narratives were created. Two examples that I use regularly to help people see the historical context of the Jesus story are the lives of Gandhi and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and I was overwhelmingly pleased to see both Marcus and Dom use these examples as well. I'm going to read you, this is page 55 of their volume, The First Christmas. What would you think of a book that started with the opener, "I'm going to discuss Mahatma Gandhi as a Hindu saint, but I'll skip all that distracting stuff about the British Imperial India." Or another with, "I'm going to describe Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. as a Christian saint, but I'll get right to his biography and skip all that stuff about racism and America as background baggage." You would know immediately that something is seriously wrong with those authors' presentations. And I personally could not agree more with Dom and Marcus here. So if we're going to be able to wrest these two narratives from the militaristic, political, economic, and theological eclipse of empire and restore them to their original, deeply imperially subversive character, we must discover, I believe, their Jewish, their Christian, and their Roman context. And once we see the historical context of these stories, we can't unsee it. And once we know it, it can't be unknown. And once you experience this, it forever changes how we read the birth narratives of Jesus. So next week, we'll look at Matthew's narrative. Then the following week, just before Christmas, we'll be turning our attention to Luke's. And my hope is that through this short series, that you'll read the birth narratives in Matthew's and Luke's Gospels anew, and that your heart will be renewed, and that you will be inspired as a Jesus follower to more deeply embody the this world transforming values taught within these narratives. Though the early Jesus birth narratives were originally intended to subvert the Roman Empire, I believe that they also hold significance for us today who live in the shadow of our American Empire. In our era, these narratives are being once again eclipsed by the consumerism of our empire's economic machine. And the early Jesus followers' voices are lost, even to Christians who are most familiar with these narratives, these Christmas stories. Systemic racism continues to thrive. Xenophobia towards Syrian refugees and Muslim Americans flourish. And U.S. militaristic methods of achieving peace are continually touted by those who carry the name of this babe from Bethlehem. So if we're going to rediscover the original subversive power of the birth narratives of Jesus and rightly apply their stories to our lives today, we must begin with reading these narratives in the matrix of Imperial Rome and its grinding clash with the hopes of first century Judaism. I'm going to begin wrapping up this week with page 37 of The First Christmas. I'll read to you just about four more paragraphs. They're short paragraphs from this book, and these are the paragraphs that I think will lay a foundation for what we'll be looking at next week in Matthew and the following week in Luke. Again, this is Marcus Borg, Dom Crossan's The First Christmas, page 37. Who is the King of the Jews? That was Herod the Great's title, but Matthew's story tells us Herod was more like Pharaoh, the lord of Egypt, the lord of bondage and oppression, violence and brutality. And his son was no better. Rather, Jesus is the true King of the Jews, and the rulers of his world sought to destroy him. Who is the Son of God, Lord, Savior of the world, and the one who will bring peace on earth? Within Roman imperial theology, the emperor, Caesar, was all of these. No, Luke's story says that the status and those titles belong to Jesus. He, not the emperor, is the embodiment of God's will for the earth. Who is the light of the world? The emperor, son of Apollo, the god of light and reason and imperial order? Or is it Jesus, who was executed by empire, the light in the darkness, the true light to whom the wise of this world are drawn? And where do we find the fulfillment of God's dream for Israel and humanity? In the way things are now, or only beyond death, or in a very different world, this side of death? Again, that's page 37. The gospel of Rome promised peace through victory, militaristic victory achieved by violence. The conquered interpret this kind of peace in a vastly different way than the conquerors do. We see this over and over again throughout history. The gospel of the early Jesus community envisioned a peace through restored justice for all and through a distinctly nonviolent transformation. Over the next 2 weeks, I'm looking forward to sharing these two birth narratives with you and focusing on how the first century Jesus community heard and read them in the context of their own era. And what we're about to discover, it has for me, and it may mean for you as well, that you will no longer, you'll never read these stories in quite the same way again. Heart group application this week. Number one, I want you to take some time to read Matthew 1 and 2 as well as Luke 1 and 2. Begin familiarizing yourself with each story and try to keep them separate for now in your reading. Don't blend them together. Don't look for harmony, like a harmony of the Gospels approach. Keep them separate. Each story has a point. Number two, to help you do this, I want you to list what each story has in common and then where each narrative differs from the other, what's different about them. And then number three, in preparation for next week, create an outline of Matthew's birth narrative as this is the one that we'll be looking at first. And you can do this either on your own or as a group with your heart group. And again, I am looking forward to next week already. Until then, keep living in love till the only world that remains is a world where love reigns. I love each one of you dearly. I'm so glad you're listening to this series with us this year. Happy holidays, and I'll see you next week. Thank you once again for listening. Everything we do here at Renewed Heart Ministries is for free, even our educational seminars that we do in various venues. We are a not-for-profit religious re-education ministry. If you'd like to support the work of Renewed Heart Ministries, you can make a one-time gift or you can become one of our monthly contributors by going to www.renewedheartministries.com and clicking the Donate tab at the top right. Or you can mail your contributions to Renewed Heart Ministries, P.O. Box 1211, Lewisburg, West Virginia, 24901. Make sure you also sign up for our free resources. And remember, every little bit helps. And as always, anything we receive above and beyond our annual budget, we gladly give away to other charities that are making both systemic and personal differences, significant differences in the lives of the poor. And to those of you who are already supporting the work of RHM, we simply could not do this without you. From all of us here at Renewed Heart Ministries, thank you.